hooked on all my senses. You made me feel so whole. Yes, I will love it till the day I die. The music of my soul.
Indeed, one of my favorite songs of so many favorite songs from the musical Memphis, which is currently playing at the Porchlight Theater over at the Ruth Page Art Center. And I saw the show. It was so great. Everything Porchlight Music Theater does is so great. And I'm thrilled that I am joined by the stars of this show. If you're not familiar with Memphis, we'll catch you up. But the lead is a guy named Huey Calhoun, and playing that role here, I've seen it on Broadway, seen it on its national tour, but outshining all of them is Liam Queeley, who's playing that role here in Chicago. Hey, Liam, welcome. I appreciate you joining the podcast.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
And playing his girlfriend, love interest, and all-around talented person in the show, the name is Felicia, and she is so wonderful. But playing that role as better than they do on Broadway, Arielle Williams, who has such a storied career here in Chicago as well. Arielle, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And the director of this show, I was so thrilled to see he was directing it because I know so much of his work at the Black Ensemble Theater, like the Sammy Davis Jr. story where he refused to cast me as Sammy Davis Jr., and I'm still not over that. But I forgive him, and here he is for his, I think it's your first work at Porchlight Music Theater, Daryl Brooks. Am I right about that?
You're right. This is my first one. How you doing, Paul?
I am great. Good to talk to you again. Well, let me ask you, what is it about the show Memphis that took you over to Porchlight to say, that's a show I got to work on?
Hey, the story and the music and the dancing that I knew was going to be involved in the show. Everything about it just captures what I love. It's a love story in the middle of 1955, an interracial love story in the middle of 1955 that's surrounded by some of the greatest music that we can think of. And what I mean is by genres. We're talking about rock and roll. We're talking about R&B, blues. A little bit of everything is in there, and the music really tells the story. And it's a lot of drama, and it's just perfect. It was just a perfect fit for me.
And I got to tell you, the music and lyrics by David Bryan, this is just some of the greatest music. I mean, I can never get it out of my head. I just love the original music that's in this show. And Liam, so you play Huey Calhoun. You and I talked the night that I saw the show afterwards, and the performance on Broadway, the dialect in it, it's just this deep, you know, I don't even know what dialect that they're using with other people to play it. But you play this, I think, fairly realistically. Talk to me and tell my listeners about who Huey Calhoun is, how he finds himself in this story, because I think he's kind of a cool guy.
Yeah, well, Huey Calhoun is kind of loosely based on a couple different DJs of the time. The biggest influence on the character is Dewey Phillips, who was one of the first people to play rock and roll. In, you know, he's a Memphis DJ, one of the first people to play rock and roll. There's also a little, you know, some references to Alan Freedon there, too. But, Dewey Phillips was this guy who, you can find clips of him on YouTube and, you know, elsewhere on the internet, and he's just this kind of manic personality. He hosted this show on, I think it was WHBQ out of Memphis called Red Hot and Blue. Mm-hmm. He was one of the first white DJs in the country to play what was referred to as race music, to play, you know, rock and roll and use his platform to present it to a wider audience.
And that he does. And Arielle, you play Felicia Farrell, his love interest. But, you know, when Huey first stumbles on into the club that's owned by your brother, who's none too happy about this relationship, Felicia's a little bit hesitant as well. But But Huey kind of grows on her. Tell my listeners about Felicia and her character, because there is a while where you kind of wonder whether she's taken by this character, Huey, this white guy, and that's not supposed to be the connection at that time and in that place. But at the same time, Huey makes a lot of promises to her. What do you think is driving Felicia?
What I think is really driving Felicia is her overall goal to be a star in music and have a different platform and create a different life for not just herself, but her brother. And through that journey, Felicia and Huey find themselves through the music, and that romance is really alive through the music that goes throughout the whole show. Which I think is really beautiful.
It really is. You know, Daryl, the casting has been amazing in this show. It always is at Porchlight, actually, but especially in this show. And I just want to give a shout-out. He's not with us on this interview, but playing Felicia's brother Delray is Lorenzo Rush Jr. And I've seen that role played by different people. And Lorenzo just knocks my socks off with this, Daryl.
Oh, yes. You know the greatest part about casting with this is that the choreographer and the music director and I, and also Michael Weber, just, we had so many auditions, but we weren't going to just cast anybody or just cast a name or whatever, you know, just to get it up. We said that we had to have a perfect cast. Like, the cast just had to just fit together. And so when we started to put the pieces together, Lorenzo just kind of fell in, as well as Ariel and Liam. They actually auditioned on our final day, where it was like, we have to find somebody at this point in time. It just fell perfectly. There was I couldn't have asked for a better casting situation to happen, because all the blocks just fell completely into place, all the way from the ensemble through the principals. It was just perfect.
And it is. And Liam, when I you know, take a look, and I've seen you perform on stage before. I know I saw you as Claude and Hare over at Mercury Theater, which was great. And I think you worked with my buddy Michael Mahler in doing October Sky, right?
Yeah.
And he's my adopted son, but I'll explain that to you later.
Oh.
And I adopted him once. It cost money. It was a whole thing for a charity. But anyway, I sort of look at your role in Fiddler on the Roof and all this sort of stuff that you've done. It's sort of a wide variety. What was it about the role of Huey that intrigued you in this guy? And somewhere in this answer, you need to work in the word huckadoo and tell me why I just asked you to do that.
Sure. I'll be honest, the role, when I saw it on Broadway, I mean, the song Memphis Lives in Me just kind of I remember I had that stuck in my head, and I would sing it just for fun for years and years and years. And then when I came into audition for Porchlight and they gave me the offer, I was horrified.
I'm sure Daryl's happy to hear that.
It was such a big undertaking.
It was a good thing.
It's not a character that I think that there's a clear way to play it. You know, I think that, this is true for many characters, but I think for the role of Huey, he is such an imperfect character, and so finding the balance, finding the heart of who he is, especially in the beginning of the show, and trying to carve out what his arc is in the play, and what I wanted it to be, and what Daryl wanted it to be, and, you know, like what it was going to be with the entire production put together. You know, before we got into rehearsals, I just kept studying my script and, you know, tried to figure out what it was. And then I got into that first day of rehearsal and saw the cast and, you know, got to work with Daryl and Jermaine and Chris. And I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be a lot of fun. This is going to be great. This is going to be a lot of hard work, but it's going to be spectacular. And, audiences seem to agree.
Yeah,
digging it as well.
I've never been disappointed with the Porchlight production. I don't know why. It's just always true. It's big. It's broad. Billy Elliot. I mean, just so many different things that they've done there. It never ceases to amaze me. And Ariel, your background. I mean, I saw you as Laurel in Dreamgirls, young Josephine Baker. You've done such great things too. This character, and it's funny because a lot of your characters, well, like Josephine Baker. I mean, you know, face the racism, face the challenges that folks in that era faced. Your character faces it here too, but on so many fronts, not just a white black thing, but you've got Huey's mother to deal with, so many different things. Felicia's a pretty strong character.
Yeah, she has to be. She doesn't necessarily have a choice. In those times, within the process, Daryl had to explain to me, this is what they dealt with. So there was no option of doing something, rerouting, or expressing yourself in different ways, how we do in 2018. You just really had to stick with the times and understand what black women went through and still to some extent go through. It was a lot. But it was I really loved the train, Felicia, yeah, on stage. She had a lot of different elements.
And Daryl, it's a train that keeps running. Now I have June 10th as the closing date. Is that going to be the closing date? Any extensions? Let's tell folks here if we know about it.
That's it's extended through June 16th.
Oh, that's good. Then I had a feeling it was probably beyond what I had in my notes, and I'm glad to hear that because I'm sure you're playing at full houses every night.
Yeah, June 16th is the closing day, the day before Father's Day. So make sure you bring your father in to see the show.
Yeah, oh, totally. I mean, this is a show. It really is kind of a show for the whole family. I don't recall there being, and I've seen the show 6 or 7 times. If there's bad language in it, I don't remember there being any.
It's quick.
Okay, it happened so quick I missed it, maybe. But the music is so incredible. And I have to ask you, Daryl, what was your, in terms of knowing this show ahead of time, had you seen it on Broadway? How much familiarity did you have with this just incredible show?
None at all.
Wow.
I hadn't seen the show on Broadway. I hadn't seen it on YouTube or any of those places or anything. Before I got the offer, and it was just something that Michael Weber and I had talked about. Hey, we just need to, you need to come work at Porchlight. And I was like, great, throw me something. And he was just like, Memphis. And I said, great. And I had never seen it. I'd never heard of it. Wow. The first time that I had seen it was after I got the offer.
And I'll tell you, when I saw it on the list for the season coming up, I just went through the roof. I was just so thrilled that this was part of the season. And by the way, I hope you all come see me when I host the New Faces of 1964 evening.
Oh, yeah. In the mailer. That's exciting.
There you go. So that's in October for me. That, Daryl, is my audition for the Fiddler on the Roof rendition you and I will be doing at some point.
Okay.
By the way, Liam, he would have cast me as Huey if he only knew that I was available.
Well, I'm glad I got in the door.
Yeah, you can obviously see my lack of success.
Another day of audition.
Yeah, apparently I'm not casting anything, so I just keep looking for something. I did ask you, Lee, I asked you, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but I got to get a huckadoo from you. Just kind of briefly tell my lick. And I had that little machine I showed you the night I met you that kind of says huckadoo in Chad's voice from Broadway, but I just love it. But give me a huckadoo and tell me why you say it.
Yeah. Well, I gotta feel like I'm gonna blow out the speaker on my phone. Lord knows what my neighbors think of that. It's a exclamation that just kind of jumps out of Huey's mouth for no reason one day when he gets really excited, and it kind of becomes his catchphrase throughout the entire show, yeah. And you can actually see it. Like that word progressed through the show, like it's just something that Huey says whenever he's feeling it to in the second act when it's on TV. It's something that all of the dancers say and all of the, you know, his what his boss says. And it's just kind of caught on because of Huey's enthusiasm behind it.
Totally. In fact, now I just remembered where the swear word comes in.
Yep.
Yeah, as soon as you said that, I went, oh, that's right. It just kind of slipped my mind for just a moment. Well, Memphis is at the Ruth Page Center for the Performing Arts, which is located on Dearborn. It's a new home. I preferred it when you were over on Belmont because that was, like, easy for me to get to. This is still good. This is in the heart of the Gold Coast, and have some dinner at Q before you go over there.
Yeah.
And plenty of parking in the area and, you know, Spot Hero and all that to make it available. Tickets, you can get at porchlightmusictheater.org. I've always told Michael Weber I'm impressed that they spell theater the correct way, T-R-E at the end, the way the Brits do it. Let's be British about it, and I think that's good. But anyway, playing through June 16th at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts. Just incredible performances. My congratulations to you, Liam Queeley, and Ariel Williams. By the way, they performed on the WGN Morning News, so you can go online to WGN News, dbnews.com, and you'll work there your way. Just look for the Around Town segments, and you'll find them there. I know I'm going to watch it again. I watched it when you were on. I love seeing it. And Daryl Brooks, I'm sure you'll be back at Black Ensemble, but also Porchlight again for some other shows coming up. And you guys are great. This is just such a great show. I'm so excited to talk to you, and congratulations. Do a great job, and haka do to all of you.
Hey, haka do. You.
All right, let's go out with a little more Memphis in myself. Probably one of the most popular Andrew Lloyd Webber scores that there ever has been. Talk to and Tim Rice, I should say that too. And people who are asked for like favorite musicals, I've been reading a lot about this lately. People just they go to this one, Jesus Christ Superstar. Well, okay, that's great. And what's amazing is that while this production has been done a lot in so many different venues, to my knowledge, it's never been done at the Lyric Opera House, which is where it is now. You don't have much time to see it. It's only there until May 20th. But I saw it recently. It knocked my socks off from the first note that it began. I just thought it was absolutely incredible. Now, look, I know a lot of people want to then sit down with Jesus and Judas and stuff. But, you know, there's an incredible talent in this show who plays Pontius Pilate, who I happen to know has done other incredible things. And I said, actually, I want to talk to that guy. And so that guy made him available for the podcast. And you will know him from Jersey Boys on Broadway, where he played Tommy DeVito. He did the national tour of Jersey Boys. He then joined a group, became incredibly popular, called Under the Street Lamp, which are basically Jersey Boys who left Jersey Boys and still wanted to sing Jersey Boys. So they did that. And I'll stop with my introduction, because joining me now is Michael Cuneo, better known in the world and on stage as Cuneo. He plays Pontius Pilate. Hey, Cuneo, welcome to the podcast.
How are you, Paul? Thank you for having me.
I am great. You are such an incredible talent. So, but let's talk about Jesus Christ first. Not Jesus
Absolutely.
Christ, but the show.
The man or the show? Because how much time do we have?
Yeah, I was going to say, otherwise we got a lot of reading to do. So right. I'm sure most people, everybody knows the story, I imagine, of Jesus Christ and Superstar. But
yeah.
This is done
Spoiler
as a rock
alert,
opera.
He dies at the end.
Right. There's no kind of wondering what's going to happen. But it's this version at the Lyric. I mean, people who have seen it before, you all walked on. You tell my listeners about how cool this is.
Well, I got to say, and it's weird because I'm not somebody that usually gets so excited about a show. You know, you don't want people to think you're biased because you're in a thing or whatever. But as you mentioned in your intro, like just personally, I've been an extraordinarily huge fan of this show. The first show I ever saw professionally done was Jesus Christ Superstar. It completely got me interested in making music for a living and doing theater. It was one of the very first albums I remember my mom owning. It was the first CD we bought when CDs came about. I'm aging myself here a little bit. But I have grown up with this music and loved this music for as long as I can remember. And I have been in multiple versions of the show. I have seen multiple versions of the show. And the thing about it is I feel like people who are fans of this music, fans of this story, we all kind of have an idea in our head of what we want it to be or what we hope it to be. And although there have been some spectacular productions out there, I have to say, for my money, this is the first time they've ever really gotten it right. It's everything you could possibly want or hope it to be. And with just what doing it as a lyric opera provides is, in addition to this incredible, timeless score that, for my money, is still sound as fresh today as it did almost 50 years ago when it came out, we've got, you know, not just the live rock band on stage, but we've got a 37-piece symphony orchestra. We have not just the cast of 40 people that are singing and dancing on stage, but we've got another 30 opera chorus filling in all the background vocals and adding to their voices to the experience. And it's just, it's a word that gets, that is overused, but it is truly an epic, epic production.
It really is.
And then you add this, the choreography, the staging, the costumes, the energy. One of the things that I love about this show is, you know, it's a difficult show to cast, and it's hard to find people that can really do it justice, you know, and I'm not trying to talk trash about your everyday musical theater singers, but it's not that kind of show. This is a rock show, and they cast the most exciting people. This is, for me, I've gotten to do a lot of cool things, as you mentioned, but I don't think I've ever worked with a cast that is so uniquely talented, and each and every one who's so just brilliantly brings so much energy and talent to this show. Like, the Judas, I made a joke, like, they should just retire it after this one, because I can't imagine anybody getting it more right. And as a fan, to get to be a part of it, to get to be in it, is just such a dream come true.
Ryan Shaw plays Judas. Heath Saunders plays Jesus. And by the way, this in a show that will go nameless, Heath was on a show recently during the run, and he was asked whether he watched the NBC live version of this and how it compared. And his answer was, well, I didn't see it because I was in it.
Yes, several people from our company were actually in the NBC version. And I think, you know, the reviewers here in Chicago and the audiences here in Chicago have been so generous with their praise and so, I think, moved, understandably, by this production. And I think up until the lyric version, NBC kind of set a new standard. I think everybody agreed that they did a really extraordinary job with the piece. And there was, you know, always that, like, well, how are we going to compare? They happen so close to each other. And I don't feel comfortable saying it, but I know Chris Jones had, he's a reviewer here in town, and he seemed to think it just blew the NBC one out of the water. And it's not a competition. That's not the point. But just the fact that people have responded so well to it is just, you know, when you love a thing and you're proud of a thing and you enjoy doing it, it's just that much nicer to know those efforts weren't in vain.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, Chris Jones, no, just as far as I'm concerned, not just any critic. I mean, I respect him more than almost anybody in this country in his comments. And I once said, you know, Chris, you and I actually agree in like 95% of the time on shows. And he said, and Paul, the other 5%, you're wrong. He made a good point.
He sounds like a funny guy.
That British guy. He is. But hey, you are no stranger to this show. And so people before I get to that, this is different for you. If I were going to cast you, your voice, and I know your voice, Cuneo, you hit some high numbers. You cover female voices more than you do male. But this particular role, Pontius Pilate, this is not what you do in the show.
No, not at all. It's a very different kind of role for me. And in the past, I usually played Jesus. My go-to audition song was always Judas material. I was really surprised and kind of intrigued that they saw me for this other role, which has a much different sort of vocal characteristic. But when you see it in the context of the show, it all makes sense. Like, the casting has just been spot on. And while I think playing Jesus is one of my favorite roles, just again, because the music is so extraordinary, I never occurred to me that I would ever get to inhabit a character like Pontius Pilate. And, you know, growing up Catholic and being familiar with the show, it's kind of easy to write that character off as sort of a one-note kind of villain. You know, he's the bad guy. He's the one that punishes Jesus and sentences him to death. And one of the things that has been really unique about this production and really fun for me as a performer, as an actor, is really exploring the conflict that he dealt with, you know, really understanding him as a man in much the same way that the show frames Jesus as a man. You really deal with his conflict in a different way, and the fact that he's really up against the wall here and is being forced against his own will to kind of, play this part in history. And there's a song in the first act called Pilate's Dream where he kind of has a premonition of things to come, and you can see that there's really, he doesn't want to be he doesn't want to go down in history, you know, having been the guy that condemned Jesus, and spends the rest of the show basically trying to avoid his fate. Yeah. And I was surprised at how moving that experience was. I was surprised at how much emotion and how much as a person playing a part, how much it moved me to kind of walk through that journey night after night. And I think it's something that's a little bit different than people are used to particularly when it comes to that character. And again, like in the Bible and Catholic school growing up, I always just thought of Pilate as just a bad guy. You know, if he hadn't been such a jerk, maybe Jesus wouldn't have had to go on the cross. You know?
Yeah, you get a different portrayal of him here. But I will say, when I think of a song like Gethsemane, which is sung by Jesus, that to me is a song that kind of that would showcase your chops, don't you think?
Absolutely.
So you know what, Michael?
One of my favorite songs to sing.
You know what, Cuneo? You don't know I was going to do this, but here you are doing Gethsemane.
Oh my gosh.
I'd have to know my Lord. I'd have to know my Lord. Why should I die?
Okay, see, Cuneo, that's your voice.
That's right. You really did some deep digging there, Paul. I'm impressed.
You did that. You were in Jesus Christ in that lead role at Star Plaza.
That's right, a couple of years back. And that's, you know, I have to say, it's so fun coming on your show because Chicago is like a home away from home for me. And I have to correct you because you introduced me. I never actually did Jersey Boys on Broadway, but I did do it right here in Chicago in the sit-down production that ran from, I think, 2007 to 2010. I came in and did that here for the last year. And Street Lamp, the band that you'd mentioned, that was based here in Chicago and obviously worked in Indiana, which is very close by at the Star Plaza. So I love this town. I love being here so much. I love being at the Lyric. It's my first time there. And I've probably put on about 15 pounds because pretty much all you do in Chicago is eat. And when the food is so good, who can blame you, you know?
True.
But that's really fun. I can't believe you found that. That's crazy.
Well, I figured it's the role I would have cast you in, but nobody was asking me over at the Lyric. And the thing
is,
by the way, people who are recognizing your voice or you're being familiar with them, it's because, of course, you were in, I think, three PBS specials with the Under the Street Lamp folks.
Yeah, I did the first two of them. That's right.
Yeah. And by the way, on the Broadway thing, I swear, I know you didn't star in it, but I thought you had a Broadway moment in Jersey Boys. Did you not?
Oh yeah. A Broadway moment. No.
I mean, were you on Broadway for
a couple of times, but they certainly invited me to join the company there, but things had gotten so involved with Under the Street Lamp at the time. We were busy touring on the road, and I was never quite able to do it, although I would have loved to. But
so that's my memory.
But I will
And the thing is, you're also, before we run out of time, I also want to talk about you. I mean, you are sort of also, you have bands, whatever, but your voice is so incredible in so many ways. You've got a CD that you recorded a couple of years ago called Back Alley Soul.
That's really right.
And I know you've got a new project coming up. Tell my listeners a little bit about what you have planned.
Absolutely. So, you know, the music that I love most, the music that inspires me the most and that I have the most joy singing is vintage classic soul music, you know, that sort of 60s and 70s, Otis Redding, Etta James, you know, Tina Turner. Those are the artists, and that's the music that really inspires me, James Brown. And when I was working with PBS and Under the Street Lamp, one of my first solos for them was At Last, my version of At Last, the great Etta James classic. And that kind of just opened me up to a whole, the woman, Joanne Doherty, who plays piano and was our music director for a time with that, she said, you know, I bet you could sing this whole album. And it sparked a thought in my head. And ever since then, that's basically what I've been doing. So I put together a show called Cuneo Sings Etta. I'm just getting ready to release the live EP and in the process of hopefully working out a PBS special that's just dedicated to the music of Etta James. And we sing in the same key. We have very similar qualities vocally. We got the sort of the sweet sound, but also the very rough, intense sound. And she's one of my favorite artists to cover, A, because she inspires me so much, and B, just because her catalog of music is so extraordinary.
Well, you know what?
And
you know what? I'm going to let listeners decide for themselves just how Etta you are. Let's hit it. Cuneo as Etta.
I found a thrill to press my cheek to, a thrill that I never know. Oh yeah, you smile,
What do you think, Cuneo?
I mean, well, I just love that song. I've probably sung that song 100,000 times, and I still don't feel like I've ever gotten it right. And that's the joy of being a live performer and working in music as a medium. You know, there's always room for growth. It always inspires you. It always changes you, and hopefully forces you to improve. And that's, again, going back to Superstar, that's been one of the great joys of this production is, you know, we really started with the music first. For those fans of the Brown album, for those fans of this piece as a piece of rock music, not just a piece of theater, they're going to get everything and more that they want from the show.
It's
and
true.
I just want to say thank you again for the plugs and for having me on. It's a really funny surprise there.
Have to do that. I think the world of your talent. People that want to see Jesus Christ Superstar have until the 20th. You get to see people like Cuneo perform with, as he said, incredible talent. You can go to lyricopera.org and check it out, or jcsuperstar.org. I think that'll tell you more about the production. It is a Lyric Opera only show. This is not a touring thing, folks. So you got through May 20th to see it here, because then it disbands from its current existence, correct?
That's right. I believe there is a tour planned for maybe 2 years from now.
Yeah, but not now.
I don't think they're going to take the symphony and the opera course with them. So
no.
This is definitely the time and the way to see it.
Trust me, you don't want to miss Jesus Christ Superstar at the Lyric Opera. Check it out. Only until May 20th. And for Cuneo, people that want to follow you and check you out, I know you're on Twitter at Cuneo4, C-U-N-I-O, the number 4. Any place else
want
people to kind of check out your back alley soul or what's coming up? How do we keep up with you?
That's the magic handle, at Cuneo4. You can find me on Instagram, on Facebook, or you can go to my website, michaelcuneo.com. And, of course, Back Alley Soul is available on iTunes. So definitely, if you like soul music, check it out.
Cuneo, thanks for being with me. You know I prefer to call you
always
Michael.
A pleasure.
You let me. I appreciate it. Jesus Christ Superstar, Jesus Christ Superstar over at the Lyric Opera through May 20th. And don't miss Cuneo now and forever. You're going to keep seeing him through the years. He's an incredible talent. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much, Paul. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
You're on this team for real now, Terry.
We want to rely on you.
Just like Ike and me and G rely on each other.
You be healthy.
You feel us? You need me to step up. You need to rely on me. To do an extra job. To help out.
We think it's something you can do.
Here. Take a look at this, Terry. Examples of what we're looking to buy.
Stuff like that.
Guns?
Yeah! Guns! We're looking to buy guns, any guns, from anybody willing to sell.
Any condition, any kind.
We want to buy people's guns, take those guns out the hood. We want to buy them and take the guns someplace else. You need me to tell people you're buying guns.
We buy their guns, then those guns off the street.
We pay top price.
Less guns off the street, less problems out here.
Yeah.
It sounds simple. It sounds like there's no setup going on here, but boy, what a disturbing story it is once you sit through the play called To Catch a Fish, which is currently a Timeline Theater Company over on Wellington in the city. Such a great location, by the way. 1615 West Wellington, right near Broadway. It's inside a church, whatever, but it's such great space, and they've had such great plays there over these last few seasons that I've been seeing. It's wonderful. Well, joining me now, the stars of To Catch a Fish, they're going to explain a little bit more about why you were hearing what you were hearing. First is Gino Walker. He plays Terry. You heard that name, Terry, in there, Terry Kilborn. This actually is his Timeline Theater debut, although he is a Chicago native, but boy, Gino, what an incredible role you took. We're going to talk about it, but this was a challenging role.
It was a challenging role, but it was. There's a lot to Terry. I'm continue to be really thankful to Brent, playwright, for writing such a great role. It's certainly not a it's not a fun role to play. That's here, but it is joyous to have such a great role to sink my teeth into.
Yeah, absolutely, and nuance. We'll talk about why in a moment. We talk about the character, but also joining us is Linda Bright Clay. Now, I got to tell you, every time she's on stage, she lights it up. And I don't care if she's in a supporting role or what she's doing. The attention, maybe this isn't a compliment, I mean it to be, but the attention goes right to her. She's just so magical to watch, a Chicago native. I saw her recently in Breach over at the Victory Gardens, A Wonder in My Soul, The House That Will Not Stand. Oh, Linda, you're just an incredible actress.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Paul.
And I wish you'd play my mother in some upcoming show if I ever get cast.
Oh, well, we can do that. Okay. We can talk about that.
So the great thing about Timeline Theater, of course, is it's historical plays, and that triggers discussion. And so, Edlinda, I'm going to start with you on this. Just fill our listeners in a little bit about, if you don't mind, we'll have Terry join in, but what this is about, and since you're the older between you and Terry, the historical significance of a story like this, because this is based on what has happened. This is truth.
Yes. This is an actual event based on actual events that happened in the city of Milwaukee with an ATF. Excuse me, got a little allergy going on. So, an ATF operation that was set up and really did not go well for them, and especially for this particular individual and his family who happened to get caught up in this operation. ATF was intending to get illegal guns off the street of Milwaukee, and they had set up shop in an area that was not, at that point, at that time, it did not have a high crime rate. Inadvertently, though, some crime began to take place because they were trying to get guns, but it was not a well-thought-out operation. The FBI started with the initial planning, but even, you know, the FBI kind of dropped out and said, well, hey, you know, you guys take it and handle it. And it swept up a lot of innocent people in the process. And when I say innocent, I mean the family members and friends who also suffered because of their loved ones being brought in, you know, to be pawns, so to speak, in this setup.
Yeah.
So.
And indeed, in this show, you play the grandmother to Terry, such a deep, meaningful role to me, and such a spicy character too. In so many ways, you know that your character has so much life behind her in Brenda. And Gino, let me come to you, because the reason I am just so impressed with the role that you play as Terry is that Terry is and I hope I'm using just an appropriate term, but he's mentally challenged. Is that a fair enough way to word it?
Mm-hmm. He has a condition called IDD, which is a diminished mental capacity, yes.
So Terry goes through this story being set up by these ATF guys. And by the way, I was hesitant as to whether I was going to ruin anything as far as the story. But the thing about Timeline is you can read about this story before you ever go into the theater. So it's not about shocking you with what happens. I think it's about teaching you a lesson. So talk to me, Gino, about this character, Terry, and what you want folks to know about him even before they come see the show, if they haven't.
Oh, wow. What a big question. Well, Terry is a character based on a real individual. Chauncey Wright was the actual individual's name. He was at the time that this happened to him, he was 24 years old, living in Milwaukee, and he got wrapped up in this ATF sting operation, and he does suffer from IDD, which what we learned about Chauncey is that he has an IQ of approximately 60 and the mental capacity approximately of a kindergartner. But that being said, he is involved in some very adult activity. Terry, like Chauncey, has a juvenile record, has been in the system, in and out of the system, and what the ATF is able to take advantage of is this is a man who is looking for companionship, friendship, and unfortunately he finds it in not the most savory of places.
And what breaks my heart about him is you just know he's this very, I think, kind of sympathetic character. You care about him. you know, as the play goes on, he's being set up for something, maybe. You're not quite sure what it is. It kind of unfolds. But, of course, Terry has a cousin, Dontre, who's not exactly maybe the I don't know. What do you think, Linda? Is he's a good kid? Dontre, I'm talking about.
Dontre is a – he is a –
You're no fan of his, I can tell you that. I mean, in the grandma's – or you're no fan of his in terms of her role.
Well, Dontre is an older cousin, and unfortunately, in this particular family, as fictionalized, they have experienced a lot of sadness, a lot of loss, a lot of depression. And Dontre, as an older cousin, he acts out his depression and his loss of family. And he uses his cousin in a way to try to, I would almost say, medicate his own pain.
Yeah.
You know, his grandmother raised both Dontre and Terry, but she sees them both, and I believe that she loves them. But Dontre, you know, he's a character that she feels is basically kind of selfish and will manipulate and use whomever, you know, is available because he doesn't seem to face his problems head on.
And that's what I love about the roles you play, Linda. You're always the aunt, the grandmother, whatever it is, who puts people in their place. In Breach, and whatever it is, you are like the one who's like in control. We always know that your character is going to be in control of what's going on, and I just love it. Gino, Terry also has a love interest in this show, which is sort of interesting because of the challenges that he faces. I kind of watch and wonder whether his love interest with Rochelle, maybe you can talk a little bit about it. Is she sincere? Is it real? How do you think she views him?
It's very real. The love is very real. The thing about Terry is, despite the fact that he has what some would call a handicap, he still lives a full life. He still he has agency, and that he wants the same thing that everyone else has. He wants friends. He wants love. He wants you know, he just wants joy. He's just a guy who's looking to live his best possible life. And part of that is his love interest, Rochelle, who is someone who does treat him like an equal, like a peer, which is something that is very important to Terry. And, I think their love is very real.
And you know, Linda, even the ATF agents, I know you're not necessarily a part of the scene where things kind of culminate, but Regina, who everybody calls G, I don't know. She's one of those people. I mean, these guys always strike me as, I know they're ATF, they're supposed to be good guys, but they don't necessarily mm-hmm. strike me that way. But she's got some heart. Linda?
I'm sorry.
I said I think the character of G, even though she's one of those mm-hmm. agent folks, I think she's got some heart.
Oh, okay, you're asking me about G.
Yeah, she's got some heart.
I think she does have. She does. She has a lot of misgivings about this entire operation. Unfortunately, she's really, you know, that trite phrase. She's between a rock and a hard place because, you know, she works for the Milwaukee City Police Department, and she has been placed on an assignment that really she finds. Makes her uncomfortable, makes her question what she's doing and the efficacy of this whole operation. But yet she has to go forward. You know, she's put in an untenable situation, and she cares. She, you know, I really think that she does care about what's happening, and especially what's happening with Terry. But she, you know, she's doing her job, which unfortunately a lot of people find themselves in those kind of situations.
Right.
Gino,
I just want to ask you, before we run out of time, I want people to see the show, but I just have to ask you, how did you prepare? Again, people have to see you perform this role to understand why I even want to ask this question, but how did you prepare for it? Because I just believe portraying Terry is just not an easy thing to do. Did you do anything special to prepare for playing it?
Yes. Well, fortunately, we have great dramaturgs helping us with the show. So they were able to direct me towards some resources, some videos of individuals who are similar to Chauncey and Terry, as well as I have members of my own family who I was able to draw on as far as just mannerisms.
Oh, okay.
And how, you know, again, I want people to come see it.
Me too. That's why I asked the question, because to even see what it is you are doing, it's why that question becomes so important to me, because it's just an amazing portrait. I think it's kind of a breakout role for you. And
thanks.
And so I will ask you, what's next for you, Gino, after this is closed? Do you know yet?
Oh, that I don't know yet. We'll see. Time will tell.
All right, fair enough. Linda, what's next up for you?
Well, I'm in the same place. Same position. Time will tell. We'll see.
All right. Well, I predict the next show, Linda, you're going to play the grandmother to Gino in some other setting, and you're going to set him straight, and you're just going to be the voice of reason, and I don't care what the show is.
Well,
that can happen in real life.
I think it does. I think I'd like to have sit down with have a glass of wine with Linda and just learn the lessons of life. I really feel that way.
It's kind of funny because that's what my son said after the opening. My, you seem to really be nailing these characters where you're bossing people around, and, you know. And so
my next interview is going to be of your son. I want to find out the truth about what.
Oh, no.
Going to set that up. Hey, To Catch a Fish, it is a world premiere by Brett Nouveau, or directed by the great Ron O.J. Parson. He's been on the podcast with me. He's so incredible. It's playing through July 1st at Timeline Theater over on Wellington near Broadway in the city. You can get tickets at timelinetheater.com. Theater is spelled T-R-E, the proper way to spell it like the Brits do. I always like to point that out. Timelinetheater.com through July 1st. It's really a production and some performances not to be missed. One of the most intimate spaces in the city, I think, is Timeline Theater Company space.
Very intimate. Yeah.
Oh, I just felt like, I mean, I just kept wanting to, you know, hand you a mint or something while I was with you. Just go, here, you want some candy? Because you're working so hard. You're right. I was in the front row. Just kind of, you know, just kind of go with it. Although, the night I was there, you will remember this. There was some woman in the front row whose phone kept telling her that her GPS signal had stopped. Now you know I was there.
Oh, yes. We remember that lady very well. Yes.
I just want to tell you, I don't think she's been seen since. No, I'm kidding. She was... Oh, we took care of her during intermission. I took care of that for you. So,
thank you, appreciate it.
But you guys kept it with you. It was such a great performance, and I encourage everybody to see it. Gino Walker, you know that night. I'm sorry to bring that up. Gino Walker, Linda Bright Clay. You guys are just, I'll use your name, Bright. Linda, a bright, shining star on the stage wherever you perform. And I thank you for being with
me. Thank you.
I urge everybody to Catch a Fish, July 1st, Timeline Theater. Thank you, folks. Have a great rest of the run.
Thanks for having us.
All right.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.